Hey guys, before we start this episode, we just want to apologize for how late we are lately. We've had a lot of scheduling issues, and this week we've actually had a technical issue with the hard drive failing, which kept this episode from going out as soon as possible. We're working on new ways of scheduling and new ways of getting this podcast out as soon as possible, so if you can just hold on tight, we'll make sure that you guys get the best podcast ever in the fastest way. And with that, let's start the episode. Show me your teeth. Show me your teeth. Welcome to Vampire Hype episode 41, where we will be talking about The Vampire Diaries season 5 episode 6, Handle With Care, and The Originals season 1 episode 6, Fruit of the Poisoned Tree. I'm your host, Kyle, and joining me tonight are Kristen and Pamela. Hey guys.
Hi.
Hello.
And don't worry, we are working really hard to try to get like Sonia and Selena on. Scheduling is really tough, and as you might have noticed, it's kind of tough getting these episodes out between Originals and Vampire Diaries, because, you know, the CW sucks. So, they'll be back shortly, but until then, you have us wonderful hosts that just make random inside jokes. So, before we start the recap and the discussion and whatnot, let's just talk to you guys about how you can contact us, in case you're listening to us for the first time. Or you have listened to us for years and you're like, I forgot how to contact you guys. It's Twitter, Gmail, and Hypeable. So twitter.com/VampireHype, VampireHypePodcast@gmail.com, or any Vampire Diaries or Originals article on Hypeable, which is HYPABLE.com. Also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. That would be awesome. We'd love to know what you guys think of the podcast and how we do. And if you're an international listener, also rate us on iTunes and let us know, because we can't see the international views. So link us to the reviews or take a screenshot, because that'd be awesome to find out. Now, let's get started with The Vampire Diaries. And Kristen, since you wrote the recap, would you mind recapping The Vampire Diaries real quick?
I would love to. All right. The Vampire Diaries, Handle With Care. So, Catherine is suddenly ravenous and apparently falling apart, including her hair turning gray and teeth falling out. But on to the real plotline. Silas traps Tessa and Stefan in a cabin in the woods by spelling the house to the sun so they cannot stop him from getting his hands on the anchor to the veil. Tessa then lures Elena to the cabin to use her as leverage to ensure that Damon kills Silas before he can destroy the anchor, and she enjoys mocking Elena for basically the whole day. Meanwhile, Damon, Jeremy, and Silas are hunting through a warehouse in New Jersey looking for the anchor. In a totally in-character twist for TVD, Tessa used Amara to anchor the veil, ensuring that Silas would never go through with dropping the veil. When Silas feeds Amara, another person who is kind of on site, she drinks his blood, attacking him, including the cure that was in his blood, and then begins to act like a crazy psycho. Also, Catherine and Caroline team up this episode and make a seriously kick-ass duo, draining Professor Maxfield of her vein and compelling him to forget about Caroline and Elena's vampire status.
It was so epic. Oh my goodness. So many twists and turns and just like,
word.
What the heck?
Also,
right?
Like, there are now three Nina Dubrovs.
Oh
like,
my goodness.
Running around, like...
I'm going to get so confused.
I know.
Like, I'm already confused with the like, stills for, like,
what do
next
you call
week?
The third doppelganger? Like, doppelgangers two. So, like, what are they now?
Oh,
well,
man.
I think they're all doppelgangers, but it's just crazy
it is,
that there's
oh
more than one.
Really complicated.
That's crazy. That just means that, like, they could just keep bringing them out from the past because, like, there have been reincarnations of... I guess Amara
like, where's
is the first one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, where's Tatia,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Everywhere.
And you know they're going to have, like, a flashback. Like, okay, we admit bringing Tatia back would be a little bit of, like, an overstatement, but let's have a flashback where Tatia is and then have Nina play that as well.
Like, poor Nina.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, but hey, she's, like, on par with Tatiana Maslany now. Tatiana
yeah.
Maslany.
At least Paul Wesley only has one other character so far.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get like two more.
And Silas. But let's just see how many more of him we can create too.
Oh my goodness. So let's start off with one of the doppelgangers, which is Catherine, who's like starts the episode eating or ordering rather like a huge breakfast in celebration of surviving. Which she only had like $5 and she like spent it on her breakfast. And her hair is graying a la like Frankenstein or like Bride of Frankenstein. That was weird. Like, do you guys think, let's just talk about her aging thing for a second. Do you guys think she's dying and like turning into her real age, kind of like the cure is making her catch up to life? Or do you think the cure is cursed? Like, and if someone takes the cure away from her, then she dies.
Well, I'm not really sure what's going on with Catherine. It definitely has something to do with being human and having the cure taken away. Like, I think the cure running through your blood keeps you from dramatically aging or it catching up with you, like we kind of assumed may happen before. But I don't necessarily think she's, like, dying because I don't understand this ravenous food consumption thing. Like, the hair graying and the teeth falling out all kind of makes me think that she's starting to like break down, but I don't understand what the eating thing is all about.
Yeah, it's like she's constantly hungry and she's like never full.
But I guess like maybe if she's decaying, like maybe like her organs are just like processing nutrients, like you know what I mean? Like she, you know, like they're processing nutrients faster than she could eat them. And so, like, if your body has nothing to make it work, then it would begin to shut down. You know what I mean? So maybe that's something, like, medical like that. Like, that's probably getting way too medical for what they're going to go into.
Grey's Anatomy here.
Logically speaking, that's what I would think it would be. I don't know. I just think it's so weird because, like, it's like her body is, like, I don't know. Like, obviously, we know she's been around for thousands and thousands of years, but, like, you would think that because it's healthy, it's a healthy host, like it would be fine without the cure. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is she just going to turn into dust? Like, and also I'm like, kind of like, you know, like in Hocus Pocus.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
not that great things, but Billy.
Oh yeah.
He's just like, you know.
That'd be so awesome.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like just completely moldy and like parts are breaking off.
Ew.
That would be really awkward.
Is it sad that like when she starts like eating everything in sight and this becomes a repeating thing that I start thinking things like succubus?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Like, oh, I start wondering.
Pregnant with a baby?
Yeah, like I start wondering what other creatures could possibly come into the story. Like, I'm like, what is going on with her? So I doubt that's it, but that was like my first instinct was like, is she some sort of crazy?
If they made her a succubus, that'd be amazing.
It would definitely be different, that's for sure.
Right?
I don't think Catherine needs that kind of power.
Oh, no. Yeah, that'd be in the wrong hands.
Talk about terrifying.
So the episode continues with the cute little Delana scene as they're snuggling on the couch, and then Silas comes in and goes like, hey, guys, I'm a witch now. Woo-woo-woo. And it's interesting because Silas is just like, well, now I get to die today, so let's kill myself and find the anchor so I can kill myself. Oh, no. Let's find the anchor, destroy the other side, and then I can kill myself. And then I'll bring Bonnie back, which I don't necessarily believed that he would do that. Like, they were talking about how, like, Bonnie and Jeremy were talking together, and they're like, today's the day I come back. And I'm like, no. I don't think they'd bring Bonnie back that soon.
I was just having trouble figuring out how this was going to work, because he has to be a witch in order to bring her back, but if he's cured of his immortality, then he's a witch, but he can't be a witch, or he'll end up on the other side. Like, I was trying to figure out when in this whole thing he was going to be able to bring her back, and I still don't have any idea.
It's like, I think they it would have had to been at the same moment that they destroy the anchor, then would have to be the same moment he dies and then brings Bonnie back. Like, it has to happen simultaneously.
Okay.
Which would be a little complicated. Because assuming the anchor is magical and they need magic to destroy it, he would have to be the witch to destroy the anchor, which means he'd have to perform the spell and then die during performing the spell. But then he wouldn't be able to die and bring Bonnie back at the same time. It's very complicated.
Like, yeah, it's very complicated. I think it's, I don't know. I mean, like, see, I feel like what is either going to happen is, like, there are two options. Like, Bonnie's going to come back, and then, like, her death will have been for nothing, and then we'll get saddled with, like, lame Bonnie storylines until she does something awesome. Or Bonnie is not going to come back, and then that's when we'll just be like, peace out, Bonnie, and bye-bye, Cat Graham. Like,
yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? Like, but they're clearly going to stretch it out at least for the whole season, I think, and then...
Oh, so you don't... Know. So let's make a wager here. You don't think Bonnie's going to come back until the end of the season?
I think if she, I think they're going to use that as like some kind of cliffhanger. Have we had our mid-season break yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, it's either going to be like, I feel like it's either going to happen mid-season break or like near the season finale.
Hmm. That makes sense.
See, now I'm going to take a page out of Kyle's book, and I don't think she's coming back.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. I think she's going to be around for the majority of this season, and they're going to be trying to figure out a way to get her back, like her just talking to Jeremy or whatnot. And then somehow they will drop the veil or something so that she gets to say a proper goodbye to Elena and Caroline. And
she'll
then
be
I think
proper
she's going to
goodbye.
But I know. It wasn't like she couldn't actually talk to them. Like, I think
Fair
they're going
to
find a way okay. for her to actually physically, like, see them and talk to them, and then she will die for good and move on.
That would be awesome, actually. Well, because the thing is, like, because they can't have Bonnie come back, because they, like, already wasted, like, a fantastic funeral scene on her. Like, if they ever come back, then that entire scene was, like, completely wasted.
Yeah, no more tears wasted on Bonnie.
Well, and I can't see her coming back into the fold and just acting like everything's fine because she literally, like, her dad's dead and, like, it just, it seems like it would be really weird for her character if she popped back into the real world and is alive and well and everything's fine and dandy, you
yeah,
know? Like,
I
it just seems...
I totally can't imagine her going to college now after all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I mean, like, aside from Jeremy, like, she really doesn't have anything else to live for because, like, yeah, she's friends with Elena and she's friends with Caroline, but she'd been, like, drifting from them, you know, for the past, like, season and a half. You know what I mean? Like, she
yeah.
wasn't really that close with them. Like, I feel like they needed her more than she needed them. Like, you know, she always knew her
and
place
now...
was, like, as a tool. And, like, the only one that she really bonded with was Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In
and
the
now
entirety...
she's kind of, they've kind of moved on without her.
Exactly.
Because they haven't
exactly.
Yeah.
And like the entirety of last season was her like her going off on her own and like not like wanting to be a part of anything and like being so separate from the group. And then now that she's dead, they're like, "Oh, we miss you." And I'm like, really, really." But you know what's going to be interesting though is that Amara in the preview apparently can see her, can see Bonnie. Probably because she's the anchor to the other side. So that'll be interesting to see how Bonnie interacts with Amara. Did you guys see that in the preview?
No.
Yeah. There's a scene in the preview where she where Amara's like, "Who are you?" And she's like, "You can see me?" Like it's really interesting. So,
cool.
I don't know, maybe that'll make things a little
But maybe that means like Amara's not really like fully back. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like cuz if she can still see Bonnie and Bonnie's like on the other side.
But like if you're
or,
the anchor to the other
can,
side then you'd be able to see
true.
Like both.
Yeah, but also it well yeah that, oh that's actually a good point. Never mind. Then my theory is just like I'll
Well, I was thinking maybe she is technically on the other side but she has a physical form. Like when the veil is dropped, she just is both in both places.
Mhm.
Like, those that are on the other side can see her because she is on the other side, but everyone in the real world can see and touch her because she has a foothold. Like, she has a physical form in the real world, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say also it could just be because she's already died. Like, maybe it's kind of like with Jeremy. Like, Jeremy's died, and so that's why he can see Bonnie. You know, part of the reason why he can see Bonnie. So maybe it's because she's died, and now she's kind of back that she can still see Bonnie.
True. Yeah, I mean, it easily
know.
Could be that, too.
Oh, my goodness. So much.
All these options.
Right? The laws of the Vampire Diaries just can go in so many different ways. But let's talk about Stefan waking up on Tessa. I don't like that name. I like calling her Kezia, but like I'll just refer to her to Tessa because it's shorter. Stefan wakes up on Tessa's couch after apparently a tequila night in where they did body shots. And I'm like, ew, like, no. And Tessa's just really happy to learn that Silas is now mortal and she can kill him. And like she trapped Stefan in the she didn't trap Stefan. She got trapped into the house by Silas, who cast a spell on the cabin until the sun goes down. And everything that happened to that cabin, I was just like, ew, no, Tessa, get out. Like, get off my man. Like, her flirting with Stefan and Stefan flirting back was so annoying. Did anyone else
No, I was actually very disappointed in Stefan. I was like, Stefan, Tessa is a stage 5 clinger. You need to not. Like, this can only end in disaster. I have anxiety watching him on this show.
See, now, I was over here giggling because I'm like, she is a stage 5 clinger and this is going to be hilarious. Like, I want her to fall in love with Stefan just so that it's like, Stefan, what are you doing? Stefan, don't do that. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but
about?
You know,
like,
what? She's going to, then the moment she calls him Silas, he's going to freak out.
True story.
See? The trials and tribulations of a stage 5 clinger.
Oh my goodness. Oh, poor Tessa. Like, she just needs to get a man that's not Stefan or Silas. Like, come on. Like, or she needs to just die. Either one. I'm good with either. But it leaves me wondering if there's anyone out there who actually ships Tessa and Stefan. Because there are a couple of scenes where it's like, aw, that's adorable, but gross, but adorable.
So. I mean, they are very buddy-buddy. Like, even the scene where, like, Elena's, like, sulking in the corner.
Oh, my goodness.
And then,
was
like,
so bad.
Tessa and Stefan are, like, sitting on the couch looking at, like, cooking magazines or whatever they're looking at.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But, I guess he's just like, if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
You
know? So, after that, everyone's now looking for the anchor, and Silas is like Pinky offers to Pinky swear that he'll bring Bonnie back, which is awesome. And he can remember where the anchor is because he read Tessa's mind at the party last episode. And so apparently he says that it's in New Jersey. And when he first said that, I was like, no, it's with Matt. I mean, clearly, and we were definitely wrong there. Like, did anyone else think it was like, oh, nope, you're wrong? Or, like, was I the only one who's like, ha ha?
Well, as soon as he said, well, it's in New Jersey, and Damon made that Snooki joke or whatever, and I laughed really hard, and then I went, wait a minute. The knife is clearly not the anchor then. Okay, so I have no idea what the importance of this knife is.
Yeah, right? I'm like, what the heck is that knife? Like,
yeah, because I was sold on that knife being the anchor, and I was so excited that we figured it out, and I was like, dang it.
I know what it is. Okay, so they have Amara that's locked up in that warehouse, and then they have the key to kill Amara, which is the knife, and you can't kill Amara without the knife. And that's how you bring down the other side. So, like, there's two parts. Like, how there was, like, the Moonstone and, like, the other parts of the spell that, like, broke down that spell or whatever. It would be...
Yeah.
The knife would be the thing that they need to kill Amara, and you can't kill Amara any other way and bring the other side down at the same time.
Kind of like a white oak stake.
Yes.
Like, it has to be that.
I can see it. That would be an... like a really cool reason as to why the travelers are traveling with it, and they're telling Matt to keep eyes on it while like Amara is like off in this like warehouse.
I could definitely see it. Like, it makes sense. I guess we'll just have to kind of see where this knife's importance comes back into play. Cause I'm sure we'll hear about it again.
Oh yeah. Let's see how Vampire Hype does on its predictions now for the rest of the season now. So the travelers want to keep Silas away from the anchor at this point, because we don't know it's Amara yet. And when they were like, oh, we don't want you.
They
want
to keep Silas from Amara, like, in the other side. Like, Amara was believed to have passed on, and they want to keep Silas from her at all costs. They want the veil right where it is. So that's like their goal is to keep Silas from getting what he wants.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, okay. That makes sense. It was very confusing though, because when Damon met these two like random travelers, I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, what's with their voices? Like, that was the most random thing. And then like Tessa's just like, oh yeah, well, I'm not going to tell you why this, I'm not going to tell you why I don't want the veil. Or like, what was she was keeping something from Stefan? What was it? Do you guys remember? No. Because I totally... I remember wanting to know what it was because Tessa was keeping it from us, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, she wasn't telling him what the anchor was. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-mm. There's a reason as to why the travelers didn't want Silas dead yet. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want Silas dead yet. So that was interesting. Because
I vaguely remember this, but I think I was like paying more attention to like other stuff that was going on than like, you know.
Yeah, no, yeah, that makes sense. And then our listeners are probably like, why are you doing this? Sorry, guys. So let's move on from Tessa then, where Catherine is crashing at Whitmore with Caroline when she was trying to like pretend to be Elena, which was totally not going to happen at all. Like, ever. Like, as soon as I saw her in that scene, I was like, that's Catherine. Like, it's so amazing how you can do that.
She's done much better Elena impressions than she did there. It was a little bit half-hearted. Yeah,
that was very true. And so Caroline is like, agrees to help Catherine out if Catherine helps her out. And so they have to go on a mission to find the professor and figure out what's going on. And let's just talk about that whole thing for a second, just kind of like get it out of the way. They trap Professor Westfield, that's a mall, Maxfield. They trap Professor Maxfield, drain his blood, and compel him to tell them everything that he knows. And he has been doing experiments on a whole bunch of vampires, and apparently he's created the Augustine vampire. And Augustine is also the name of the secret council in which... invited Elena to be a part of, but then revoked their invitation because they think Elena is a vampire. I gotta say, guys, Augustine is a stupid name for a council. Why can't they just be the council?
It sounds like a new model. Like, oh, have you tried the Augustine yet? Like, you know, like a
see,
car or something.
And I know someone named Augustine. The minute I heard Augustine, I thought St. Augustine, Florida. And the only thing I remember, we took my, like, 8th grade trip there or whatever. And we did, like, a Legends and Lore tour with, like, ghost stories and whatnot. So it all fits for me because in my head, that was the word association. But see, I can see sense. Where it's not exactly the coolest thing in the world.
And I'm just like, oh my goodness, what the heck? That's like, I just want you to be, like, the secret society, like Catherine kept referencing it as. Particularly,
well, I have a feeling that this word, this Augustine thing, will be explained because you don't pull a name like that out of nowhere and not give it meaning.
Yeah,
like
especially
it's got to have some sort of backstory that I'm sure we'll get in the next couple episodes or so.
Especially when you name something the Augustine vampire, you're like, what?
Right. Like, is it a family name or like what? How is this, you know, how did
exactly.
this come about? Yeah.
And like, is this the thing that's bigger than Silas? Because like Julie Plex still said that there's a big baddie that's bigger than Silas that's coming to the show. We're like, maybe it's the Augustine vampire. So that'd be interesting. I mean, it would be interesting to see if a vampire could be tempered with scientific experiments to be made more powerful and creepier and more devastating than Silas. That would be actually... really kind of like Frankenstein. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I will say Silas started out as like the ultimate big bad. We all thought he was this like horrible, horrible thing. But like what's gone on this season has made him seem less and less powerful with each passing day. Like, he's less and less, like, the big, bad, horrible guy that we were all terrified of last season, because his powers are kind of basically gone. And, like, I mean, there's a lot of things going on that have made him seem less important. So, because of that, I think they're going to be able to sell this Augustine thing, or whatever it is that's, like, the bigger bad. I think it's going to be easy to kind of transition into something else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's I don't know. The Professor Maxfield tells them that there's a meeting happening. Elena was invited, now she's not invited, and they're never gonna let her in because a vampire can't walk in through the threshold. And conveniently enough, Catherine is human, which was interesting because as soon as that happened, like when Catherine was losing her hair, and I'm like, oh God, please be human, please don't be a vampire again, like. I thought that she might have possibly been a vampire again or something, which is the reason that she survived. And so when she was stepping up into the threshold of the meeting, and the weird woman who met them at the crime of the death scene for Megan, what's her name? Do you guys know her name?
I don't know her name, but she was like a part of the Augustine group or yeah. whatever they're yeah, called. Yeah, exactly. The secret society.
And she's just like, oh, Elena, I'm not expecting you here. Like, And she doesn't invite her in, but Catherine just walks in. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
Well, she smartly says like, oh, like, you know, well, we haven't started tea yet. And she just like stands aside, you know, which I thought was like, oh, I see what you did there. You know, and like, obviously Catherine does too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like. And so then she's, like, pleasantly surprised when Catherine can just waltz in.
Oh, my goodness. It's so helpful that they have a doppelganger that's human. But did anyone else think that Catherine might not have been able to walk in?
No, because, like, there's really no magic or, like, not magic. Like, there's no supernaturalness, like, coursing through her veins anymore. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason she wouldn't be able to.
I was wondering why she survived. I'm like, maybe if, like, you suck the blood... Like, if you suck the cure out of her and she had vampire blood in her system, then maybe she's a vampire again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was scary.
This is the other interesting thing. It's just, like, because vampires, like, in this world, like, they have blood. You know what I mean? So, like, but some vampire lore, like, some vampires don't have blood. You know what I mean? So, I don't know how that works. Or, like, did they not completely drain her? You know?
It doesn't seem like it. Apparently that whole thing where like if you have to get the cure, you have to drain everyone of the person who has the cure of every single drop is a myth. Apparently.
Well, maybe it's every drop of the cure. Like maybe the cure doesn't become one with her blood to where you have to drink all of her blood, but maybe you have to drink until you can feel that you have the entire cure. Does that make sense?
Right, that's yes. what I would think too. And then yeah. they probably left her with like the minimal amount of blood necessary for her to regenerate it. And then like,
right, you know, which would also kind of explain yeah. if Silas is still alive, why he is too.
Mm-hmm.
Right, or yeah. like Professor Maxwell when they were doing like the Caroline was doing like the calculations. Like,
oh how yeah, much she would how have many pints of blood
before he died? Yeah,
which is awesome.
Yeah, and then Catherine's like just round up, and she's like 4.7.
Oh my goodness, that was hysterical. Yeah. So I don't know, it'd be interesting, but Elena or Catherine walks into the place, fools them, and then they compel Professor Maxfield to forget anything ever happened and that he thought that they were vampires. And then when the lady comes in to check on Professor Maxfield because he wasn't at the meeting, he's like, oh, I guess I must have been busy. So I don't know, I thought that whole little scene and that little escapade of theirs was epic.
I'm wondering, though, if they may have caused a problem for themselves, because while Maxfield is off their case and he doesn't know, I'm wondering if the lady that came in thinks he was compelled.
Yeah, she definitely... I got that vibe, too. She totally looked suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, he was looking around.
He was a little too bumbly.
Yeah.
He looks like he was confused. And yeah. it's like they've all apparently studied vampirism and stuff. So like, you know.
You see, what I'm wondering is if Professor Maxfield knows that he was compelled or like has that feeling. And he's like, wait, this doesn't feel right. Because that would make sense for someone who studies vampires like he does. So, like, maybe
I think it's going to take somebody pointing out to him that his story sounds weird. Like, if this lady, I don't remember her name, but if she is talking to him and says, like, are you sure that's what happened? Like, do you remember what you were doing? Maybe then it'll click for him that he doesn't know. And if he doesn't know, then the only way he wouldn't know is if he was compelled. Like, mm-hmm. you know, something like that, he may be able to put the pieces together.
Yeah, because Professor Maxfield doesn't feel like doesn't seem like the type of person to be compelled and then just forget about it. Like, he seems like Cammy. Like, he's the person who would be compelled and, like, just kind of remember it and just kind of be like, no, I don't like this. This feels weird. So, I don't know. We'll see in the future, I guess. So, back with Tessa and Stefan, Tessa lures Elena in because of Stefan. How does she lure Elena in? I missed that entire phone call where Elena called Tessa.
She lures Elena in because they're stuck in the cabin and she needs some leverage against Damon. Because she needs Silas killed and she can't do it herself anymore. So she uses jealousy. I think she says she uses jealousy, which cracks me up the way mm-hmm. she said it. But I think it was something like she was texting Stefan or something. I forget how she did it. But she basically made Elena feel like she had to go to save Stefan from Tessa.
Yeah, she said, because Elena called and she was like, oh, Stefan's in the shower. Like, he gets really sweaty. Yeah. And Elena was like, what? And then when she got there, she was just like, I just wanted to make sure that she didn't use her feminine wiles to, like, you know, whatever. Which I thought was really funny. She was totally, like, freaking out, though. She was like, no.
Oh, poor Elena. But, it's like, she's so confused between these two brothers. I'm like, mm-hmm. dang it. And I love how, like,
I'm telling you, they should just, you know, have a three-person relationship. They should have a polygamous relationship.
Yes. And, like, that'll be the end. Polygamy on Vampire Diaries. I mean, everything else has been done. Polygamy isn't that weird, right? I mean, Caroline has sex with the werewolf.
I mean, in the grand things, probably not.
So Tessa lures Elena to the cabin. Now she's trapped. And so she's laying all of her cards on the table for Tessa, explaining that Silas is going to bring Bonnie back before to life before he killed himself, and now there's no chance of Bonnie returning, because Damon will never put anyone's life, including his own, before Elena's, which is adorable and true. And Damon has no idea what to do, because he knows that he needs to bring Bonnie back, but he also can't risk Elena's life.
May I just say, this was my favorite moment of this episode, was Elena telling Tessa exactly what is going on and what she knows is going to happen, because it just solidifies for me that Elena knows Damon as well as Damon knows Elena. Like, in the past, we know that Damon can predict what Elena is going to do. He knows better than anybody everything that she's thinking. But it's not always clear that Elena has the same kind of connection to Damon. But here, I had not even put together that, you know, that Damon would go off the deep end and say, like, no, there's no way. Because he always seems to try to find a way to get what he wants as well as save everybody else. You know, like, he always works it that way. Except when Elena is the thing in contention. Like, when she's the thing that could be lost, it's always Elena's most important. We'll figure the rest out later. So I really liked that she was able to say, Tessa, you know, here's why I'm sitting here depressed. Here's why I know what's going to happen next. And I just loved this scene. I loved it so much.
It was like the ultimate scene for, like, Delana fans. Like, cause, like, they're fighting for Delana to happen and Elena's fighting for Delana to keep happening. And it's like, aww. I, like, completely agree. I totally know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. So, so much.
And so, Damon walks into the warehouse, and they're looking for this anchor, and Damon's like, okay, so what is it? And Silas is like, I don't know. And it's like, well, what does it look like? It's like, I don't know. It's just here. That's all I know. I'm like, well, that's not helpful at all. And he runs into a traveler speaking the foreign language who manages to neutralize his daylight rings. And he's just like, why is it always a daylight ring? And they say that they don't want Silas dead yet. But then Damon kills them both. He's like, whatever. And so
I loved the daylight ring thing just because that scene in, I don't know, season 3, I think it is, with the witches when he's in and out of the house the whole time and, you know, running through trying to avoid the daylight is one of my favorite things. So as soon as that happened, he's like, why is it always the daylight ring? Like, it just took me back. I was like, oh, I love continuity. Like, aww, yay.
I didn't even remember
that. It was
that.
Good fun.
That's amazing. I love how good of a memory you have. Goodness. I didn't remember that at all.
So much fun. Yeah, no. So I just love that there was a nice little toss back to like early Vampire Diaries for all the fans that have been along the ride the whole time.
So let's just talk about that whole warehouse scene for a moment and get that out of the way so we can talk about the originals. Damon's on the phone with Elena, and isn't it that, like, she explains that, like, Tessa's just like, oh, it's not something that he'll ever want to be able to destroy? Right? Or, like, how does Damon come to the realization that it's Amara in that case? Does anyone remember?
Sorry, I'm having a coughing fit.
Oh.
Well, oh my goodness. Tessa tells Damon. Because she's, like, on the phone with him because...
Oh, yeah, and she's telling him to kill Silas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, it's not something that he'll ever be able to destroy. And Damon just kind of has that realization as he's looking at this crate. He's like, no way. And when he's like, no way, I'm like, wait, I don't... What do you mean? I don't understand. And then, like, she explains that it's not something that Silas will ever be able to destroy. I'm like, oh, no. And she's like, think about it. It's 2,000 years old. It's as old as he is, and it's something that he won't be able to kill. And then he opens the crate, and Amara's there like a statue.
That was really creepy, though, desiccated. Because, like, right. Yeah. And she's just, like, she's been in a box for, like, that long.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
I don't even know who has it worse on this show anymore. Like, that's pretty bad.
Like, what's worse? Like, dying over and over and over and in water at the bottom of, a river, or, like, being so desiccated that you're, like, a statue for 2,000 years. Right.
Or, like, being, like, Silas, who was just, like, sitting in a cave.
Yeah, like, these half poor dead vampires. Or, like...
Or being on the other side and seeing everyone and not being able to talk to them.
Or, like, Catherine being stuck in a cave for, like, hundreds of years.
Or being staked in a coffin. If you're one of the originals.
So many terrible fates.
It's so bad. But so Silas ultimately ends up waking Amara up. And with the blood of, like, one of the random people that he killed off in the warehouse. And Amara's just like, wait, what's happening? And as Silas is trying to take her out to, like, explain everything, and he's like, oh, I have the cure now, and, like, we can be together, and Amara's just thinking, oh, I can't be alive another day, I have to take this cure. And she freaking attacks him. I actually kind of feel bad for Silas, because, like, he's been, like, waiting 2,000 years to be reunited with his love, who just literally stabbed him in the back and, like, sucked almost all the blood out of his system. Like, you poor thing. That's definitely some really bad unrequited love. That's almost worse than Damon and Catherine.
Okay, but yeah. So this is, like, I was a little confused, though, because for a second I thought maybe, like, she was just so delirious that she just did not realize who it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah,
like, the last thing on her mind was that they were going to take the cure.
Well, that's what happened together. At first, though, like, at first she's like, wait, what's happening? And then she's like, oh, Silas? And then he explains what's going on. And then he explains that he has the cure. And she's like, oh, you're cured? The cure's running through your veins? I am so sorry. And then she, like...
My first instinct was, well, it sucks to be Silas. Like, here he is, he's been a statue, basically like her, for almost as long. And he's been thinking, I have to come back so that I can die to be with Amara because I have to be with Amara for eternity, blah, blah, blah. And she wakes up and her first instinct is, I gotta get out of here. Like, I am done. Sorry, Silas. Do your thing. I'm out. Like, I'm gonna kill you now. Okay, see you later.
And like, I'm wondering, like, is the crazy before or after she took the cure? Because, like, she got cray cray. Like,
I think the crazy is from being desiccated in a box for a very long time.
Is it that, or is it that she can hear the voices of people from the other side? You think? Maybe?
I think she's always been able to. I think even in the box, even desiccated, she could hear everything. Because she's almost got that, like, she's been stewing in it and has not been able to tell anyone or say anything. And that's, I think, why she's so desperate to die, is because she just can't take it anymore.
Oh, my goodness. Poor Amara. I'm wondering if she's still going to be crazy in the next episode, or if they're going to, like, make her better, like, super quick, so that she can actually have a conversation. Because I'm interested what non-crazy Lena Dobrev Amara would do. Or, like, if she's just going to be crazy the entire time and then she dies. But I don't know. So, after that, there's the whole Catherine and Caroline thing at Whitmore College. Oh, no, we talked about that already, didn't we? Oh, no, there's the Catherine thing at Whitmore College, where Catherine comes into Professor Maxfield's office with his voice recorder and tells him that she knows exactly what's going on and that she thinks that she's dying. And she needs him to help her out. And I'm like, bitch, please. He's not going to help you. Like, really? She just explained that she's a doppelganger and she's not Elena. And I'm like, what percentage of people actually think that Professor Maxfield is going to help Catherine?
Well, considering she's not a vampire, and the thing that they seem to be against in this society, the secret society, are vampires. I don't think it's too far out there to think that he may give her some assistance. Just because if maybe something that's a part of her can help him, like, since he's into this whole, like, researching and, you know, making his own vampires to figure out what's going on with them, maybe he'll try and help her for his own means, not necessarily to help her. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. I hope he can save her, because I don't want Catherine to die. Catherine's too awesome to die, guys. But that's just me.
Yeah, she's getting more and more awesome, like, as
exactly. And this season
specifically progresses.
I remember we were worried about, like, her potentially not being involved in the season at all, because Nina Dobrev can't, like, act every part ever. But apparently that's not the case, because they just added another character for Nina Dobrev to play, so that was really interesting. And I'm glad that she's being as developed as she is in this season, whereas I thought they wouldn't develop her as much. So, that's awesome. And the episode ends with Stefan getting his memory back, which I hate and I love and I hate and I love. Because I love new Stefan. New Stefan's adorable and awesome and not ripperish at all. And then now Stefan's going to hate everyone for being against him for so long. Are you guys, like, happy or glad that Stefan's memory is back?
I liked memoryless Stefan. Like, it almost seemed like we had, you know, happy-go-lucky, but not so happy-go-lucky Stefan back. Like, he was a lot less tortured, a lot less, you know, depressing and sad all the time. And he kind of had his spunk back a little bit, and I was happy to see him, but, you know, now we have good old Stefan back. Hopefully it'll be fun.
I think that, like, the best part about, like, amnesia Stefan was that he, like, pretty much, like, his reaction to things would be like Stefan's normal reactions if he wasn't so noble. You know what I mean? Like, because like the whole, even like the whole, like, the way he reacted towards, like, Damon and Elena being together, it's like not how normal Stefan would react, because he keeps it all bottled up inside. And he's like, if you're happy, I'm happy. But, like, any normal person would act like amnesia Stefan would, you know, like, and they would be upset. So it was interesting to just kind of see that, because, like, you know, it just shows a different side of him. But, you know, he had to get his memories back sooner or later, so.
Yeah, I was hoping it'd be later, though. But that's it for the Vampire Diaries discussion. I think we hit all the major points. If there are any points that we missed or you guys want to express your own opinions about parts of the episode, let us know in the comment section of this podcast post or on Twitter or at Gmail, which we will reiterate for you at the end of this podcast after we talk about the originals. But let's just talk about our favorite quotes real quick about Vampire Diaries. My favorite quote for the Vampire Diaries was when Elena and Damon were talking to Silas, and they're like, I don't know if we should trust you. You're kind of evil. I'm like, that's the understatement of the century. That was awesome. What do you guys think? What was your favorite quotes?
Mine was definitely at the end of the episode when Damon introduces Elena to Amara, and he says, Elena, meet Crazy Pants. Crazy Pants, meet Elena. Damon's nicknames for people are my favorite thing on the show. Like, yes. Barbie Klaus and Papa Original, and I mean, just, I always love his nicknames, so mm-hmm. Crazy Pants is just another one to add to the book.
He had a great one for Jeremy this episode too. He was like, put the crossbow down, Pocahontas. Which is not my favorite quote, but I just thought, like, I don't know, Silas was like surprisingly funny this episode, so I picked I'm like a supernatural Madonna.
Oh my goodness, man. When he said that, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, he had that, and then he was like, knock knock, who's there? Mayor. He's like, mayor who? He's like, no mayor, I killed him. He is funny.
I really loved Silas's episode, man. If they're gonna make him like this for as long as he's around, I'm gonna love him, because right? He was really, really funny.
He's hysterical.
Yeah, like, he was like, but you know, it's just like, you know, it was almost like because he knew he was dying, or you know, he was finally gonna get what he wanted, he just kind of like let loose with it, and that was really fun to
but it's like, to it's like watch. Yeah, what capacity does Silas have time to know who Madonna is or what a knock knock joke is if he's been in a box for 2,000 years?
And it was funny, like, to see him, like, annoy Damon, because usually Damon is doing the annoying, you know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Oh, how the tables have turned.
Exactly.
Oh, that was awesome. So, that's it for the Vampire Diaries discussion. We will now move on to the originals, which in and of itself was just awesome. And we're not going to do a recap, because we're just going to start talking about it. And let's see. Okay. It's 55 minutes in. Let's start the originals discussion. The original season 1, episode 6, Fruit of the Poison Tree, was pretty interesting. And the episode starts with Klaus and Elijah both reading really old books, and like a random girl just on the like the coffee table who's like bleeding onto like a 200-year-old carpet. And there's like classical music behind the scene, and Rebecca's just like, what is this, vampire book club? And I loved it. And they're just talking about how they're, I don't even know what they're doing, they're just bonding or like reading. And like Klaus got Elijah a girl since she's been in a coffin for so long, but Elijah wants to be honorable and not like ravish upon her, which is adorable. Even though he's hungry, he doesn't ravish upon a girl.
I love their little original family power struggle things, especially when it's stuff like this, where I think they were both sitting in that room reading because Klaus wanted Elijah to feed from the girl. Elijah didn't want to, so they're going to put her on the table and wait. Like, who's going to move first? Like, is Elijah going to feed, or is Klaus going to get rid of the girl? Like, what's going to happen? So they're just kind of like sitting around. It's like, all right, well, I'll get a book out. Like, might as well read if we're going to sit here forever. Like, that's almost what it felt like. And I love them. I love their little, I'm, you know, I'm stronger than you. I'm going to do what I want. No, I'm going to get my way. So that's kind of how I saw it.
And Rebecca just comes in like, what are you guys doing? Just stop being stupid.
Yeah, basically.
And then Haley has like a real nice like bonding moment with Elijah, where they talk about what they're doing, and she doesn't like the witches and she thinks they're evil, and I think we almost all agree that the witches are like really ridiculous. And Haley's just like, I need to, like, we need to unlink me and Sophie. Like this needs to happen. And Rebecca's all for it. And she's just like, so who do we have to kill? And Elijah's just being all awesome. He's like, probably no one. And then he thinks about it for a minute, and he's like, okay, potentially everyone, but whatever.
I
loved that whole scene, and Haley's breakfast of, like, ice cream. Like, she's getting out ice cream. She's getting out, like, some frozen cake thing. And then
and Elijah just like, no, cereal.
Makes her cereal. It was just
cute. Because she was like, I know I'm the only one that eats, but would it kill you guys to buy some milk? And she's like complaining about it. And then she's like, oh, you brought me milk. And it was so cute.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Elijah, what a softy.
They're also, like, amazing in this show. That's the thing I like about the originals, is that every character is really complicated and in-depth. And there's no, at least so far, there's no body of the originals where, like, it's just a one-sided character that does one thing forever. Or, like, if there is, they're not a main character, at least. So it helps. And every character has their good side and their bad side, and it's amazing. And when they all have these bonding moments, like Klaus and Elijah, or like Elijah and Haley, it's adorable, I have to say. Like, props to the originals for being so awesome in its first, like, 7 episodes. So
agreed.
So a hooded figure attacks Sophie and her witch friend with magic, and it turns out to be Agnes, and Agnes is just like, well, you know what, we can't have this magical baby walking around, and I hate Agnes, just so you know. And Agnes sticks Sophie with this needle, that's like this charmed needle, because she can't use magic, obviously, so they have these, like, pre-charmed or cursed objects that they can use on people, and the needle raises the body temperature of the person, so that if they're pregnant, the baby will miscarry. And so since Sophie's linked to Haley, it was easier for her to get to Sophie, inject her, and now Haley's in trouble of losing this baby. And during this entire moment, I'm just like, why isn't Agnes dead? Like the witches don't like her. The vampires don't like her. What is going on with her existence? Like, what's happening? Like, did
the witches need her. Well, because she is the only living elder, and so she's the only one who could perform the reaping, like the spell to bring the girls back.
Mm.
So they needed her to finish the ritual.
They should have kept her in a cellar, like the Salvatore cellar, and just used her when they needed her. Because we find out that Agnes is also the woman who spelled Matthew, which is Cammy's brother, and caused him to, like, kill a bunch of people. So it's like, Agnes is just this bitch witch that deserves to die. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Although I am gonna say, like, because I don't know if you guys remember, but this picture was released as, like, a teaser. Like, the picture of, like, the still of Agnes attacking Sophie. Mm. And I never would have guessed it would have been linked to Haley.
Oh, yeah. Because at the time it was late. About that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just thought it was, like, really interesting the way that they kind of played this out and stuff. But anyway.
But you know what's interesting, though? Just moving on to Cammy real quick. The fact that she can explain and she can remember that, like, something's off and that she doesn't feel any pain and she doesn't like it and she feels like she should be feeling something. And, like, she goes to her uncle during confession, who has been avoiding her because, like, he doesn't want to deal with having one twin that's alive while the other twin died, apparently. So, like, I don't know, guys. Cammy seems pretty kick-ass, and I feel like she has to, I don't know, she's got to be something more than just, like, this human who's, like, who Klaus is controlling. Like, I don't know what the hell she's going to do in the series, because she can't do anything because she's human. Like, she can't do shit. Like, she says to Klaus that she's going to remember what's happening and she's going to get him back, and I'm like, no, you won't, not unless Klaus wants you to get him back.
I think Cammy is, she's really interesting because I have to say, I wasn't a huge fan of hers at the when I first saw the pilot last spring or whatever when the spinoff pilot kind of aired. I thought she was just kind of silly and, you know, kind of superfluous. Like, we don't really need her. But every episode that we see her in this season, she is really, like, she's the tie-in for the audience so that we can really feel bonded to the story. Because she literally is a normal human who has family in the quarter and came back to, you know, be with her uncle and her twin or what. I don't remember why she came back, but like, she's just there and is surrounded by all of this crazy. And so I feel like it helps us to stay connected to the story that there is a normal human who is surrounded by all of this. And yet she's still awesome with like her ability to not be scared of Klaus, because she really isn't. Whereas everyone else in the world, vampire, werewolf, you name it, witch, doesn't matter, they're still scared of him because he's so powerful. But she manages to, like, stand up to him all the time, and it just makes me so happy. So I don't know if there's something going on with her other than, you know, just what we've seen and what we know about her. But I've grown to really like Cammy, and I hope that she sticks around for a while.
I've actually been thinking the same thing, because I do think it's really interesting that, like, you know, Klaus can, like, you know, he just gets all up in her face and she just kind of doesn't care, almost. Like, she is almost, like, completely unaware that he could snap her neck, you know what I mean, at any moment. And she just, like, she stands her ground, just like you said. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, it turns out that she, like, they have some kind of link. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Be it, like, magical,
yeah,
or what.
Yeah, so, I'm wondering, like, do you, like, you've read my mind. Like, do you think that there is a link? Like,
I, you know what? I'm not sure. Like, I go back and forth, but then I'm wondering if maybe, like, I don't know. I really don't know. But I am thinking that, like, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for Julie Pleck to just, like, throw it in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Kristen?
I don't know. I want to say that there isn't something crazy going on and that Cammy is just that way. That's just her personality. And no matter whether he's a vampire or not, that's how she's going to be. But in order for her to stay as integral to the story and not get boring, something has to happen for her. Like, maybe it's something having to do with her brother, her twin, or maybe it's, you know, something from their lineage, since we've met her uncle too. Like, maybe she's not a witch, but there's some other sort of ability or something that's been passed down their line. I don't know what it is, but eventually I feel like there's going to have to be something extra to her character to keep her involved in the story.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, as awesome as it would be to have, like, just, like, a normal human who's just kick-ass, but, like her ability to, like, not be compelled as well as a normal human has me figuring out, like, something's up there. Yeah. So, moving on, we see Elijah talking to Davina, and their plan is to have Davina perform the spell that unlinks Sophie and Haley. And Davina's incentive for doing this plan is that Elijah will give her a new page from his mother's grimoire if she performs the unlinking spell correctly. And, like, she's practicing throughout this entire episode to try to get this unlinking spell done before Haley's baby dies from this stupid freaking needle. Meanwhile, Marcel visits Thierry in the garden, which is completely completely surprising, because I totally thought Thierry was out of the picture for sure. And he tells him that Thierry is the only man that Marcel ever trusted. And so in a conversation, he takes Thierry out of the wall, which is pretty kind of him, and Thierry explains what's going on. And now Marcel understands that someone in his group is compelled, because he thinks that, because Thierry told him that the man he attacked and killed was compelled to kill his girlfriend. And now he thinks that someone else is compelled, which is, what's his name? That cute little adorable boy who quoted Lord of the Rings. I have his name
oh,
in
I
here.
I can't remember
his name. I have his name in here somewhere. He's so adorable. I don't know what his name is, but he's amazing. And so now he's on the verge of getting found out, which is really interesting. But I don't know. Do you guys think this puts Marcel at an advantage to as to figuring out who's compelled in his group? Like,
I was really glad that he went to Thierry because
I think he's definitely getting warmer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I don't know. And I think like it's only a matter of time before he finds out.
Yeah, and I like that they brought that whole storyline, like, out of the closet. Like, because we all knew what happened there for real. But I'm glad that Marcel has put the pieces together now.
Yeah, and now the Josh, which is the minion, won't be able to get one of those Daylight Rings that he was so craving for on Marcel's side. Because Josh was hoping that now that Thierry was gone, there'd be an opening for a Daylight Ring and his Daylight Vampire crew. And now that's gone. So, I don't know. Poor Josh.
Well, if you in the preview for next week, we find out that that's not entirely true.
I didn't even see the preview for next week. Goodness.
Yeah, because he's like, there's. It's not a spoiler or anything, but like Marcel just kind of says, you know, like that. You know, there's an opening for, you know, like there's a possibility of winning a Daylight Ring. So I mean, I don't think
probably,
it's entirely gone.
I bet he uses that as like leverage to figure out who's compelled or not.
Yeah, like I'm sure it's a ploy, but. At least in the preview, we kind of got the thing that maybe there might be one available for him. So who knows?
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting. So in a meeting, the mayor is meeting with the priest to talk about what they're going to do to handle the quote-unquote gas leak that Davina caused that, like, broke all of the windows in the freaking church. And Klaus visits this meeting, and it's kind of like New Orleans council meeting, whereas like there's the mayor and the humans and the priests, and Klaus visits and tells them that he needs them to find Agnes, because Agnes is the witch who hexed Sean, which is the priest's nephew. And the priest has a lot of balls. He's like, you know what, we need time, why don't you just like go away and get out of here. And I'm like, why does the priest have this many balls? Like, he can just get killed at any moment. Like, he can get replaced. What is happening?
But at the same time, like, I feel like maybe it's just like when you've lived around like that kind of hierarchy with like witches and vampires and crazy vampires, it's like, well, I'm gonna die eventually, so, you know, might as well go out with a blaze of glory. I don't know, that's kind of like the that's the vibe I kind of got, you know, especially since, like, I don't know.
It, well,
kind of,
it's like,
it kind of made it sound like because the last couple of times we've seen him, he's already kind of showed signs of just like not really paying attention or wanting to be defiant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I don't know if they've explained it in the episode and that, like, I completely forgot, or like they're going to explain it further, but like there's a reason that Marcel's not killing this guy. And so I want to know what that is. That's just really intriguing to me. And so, after a commercial break, Davina is trying to do the spell, but her Latin's way off, and she can't, like, untie the rope that represents the knot that they're bonded with, or whatever. And the priest gets a text from the chief of police, who says they have Agnes's address, and Klaus wants him to bring Agnes to the church. Agnes arrives at the church, and in order to help... And Agnes thinks that the entire witch community will turn against them if they hurt her, because she's the only link to their magic. And I'm wondering if that's right or not. Like, I don't know if... Like, do you think the witch community would be upset that their link to their magic is dead now?
Oh, they're gonna be furious. Like,
right.
There's no way they're not.
Like, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like they'd come up with a way to perform the reaping without her.
I'm sure they will, I mean, but they're pissed because, you know, she was the one.
Yeah.
The last elder. Like, not even just the spell and the reaping itself. Like, she represented the elders, the people in charge, and all of them are dead now. completely. And so now all it is, all the only witches left are the newer generation, the Sophies and the...
That brings into question, like, how do you create an elder? Like, how, like, is that, like, maybe, like, just the eldest group of witches now are now the elders? When Agnes dies, it's actually a good thing, and it makes the oldest witches now the quote-unquote elders that can perform the spell. And if the elders are Sophie and whatnot, and they can control what's happening, maybe they don't have to do a reaping.
Maybe, although at the same time, they weren't able to harvest her powers before she died. You know what I mean? That's the whole point of the reaping. So, like, that magic is lost forever.
Oh. Okay.
I'm wondering if this the elders, that there's some sort of understanding or knowledge or something that they have that they've passed down from, you know, each group of elders that is now going to have to be found another way in order for them to have the same abilities or whatever. You know, like, there's got to be something that makes the elders so special, something that makes them that important. Because other words, you know, if it's just passed down to the next oldest, you know, next oldest four witches, then it shouldn't make a difference whether Agnes died or not. But since it clearly made a difference, because Sophie kept talking about it, I have a feeling that we may not be completely done with it. They'll probably be able to, you know, find it or fix it or create a new elder or something. Like, they'll be able to bridge the gap eventually. But I think it's going to take some time and that there's something involved with creating an elder.
It would be awesome. Like, I know this isn't going to be possible and it's probably not going to happen, but it'd be hysterical if, like, by some ridiculous circumstance, Davina becomes an elder. And the very thing they don't want to happen happens, and, like, Davina's the only person, but, like, it's not possible because, like, Davina's the only person that they have to kill to get those girls back. So, I don't know. That'd be interesting, but I'm full of crack theories tonight, guys. Sorry. Well, right at the stroke of midnight, Davina actually does unlink Haley and Sophie. And in their rejoice, Elijah tells Sophie that their deal's off, and they're like, they want nothing to do with Sophie at all. And they're going to, like, and Klaus is in the church about to kill Agnes, and Sophie's just like, no, don't kill her, she's the only person who can, like, have our magic. And she explains that Agnes is, like, their link to their ancestral magic and whatnot. And Elijah promises that he will not let Klaus kill Agnes, which was a little turn on his words, because when he gets to the church, he doesn't let Klaus kill Agnes, but he kills Agnes, because that's not what he promised. He promised that he won't have Klaus kill Agnes. So, Elijah's a badass bunny from hell. Why did I call him a bunny in this recap, guys?
A badass bunny.
Well, I called him a bunny because Rebecca is trying to leave town, and she, like, meets up with Klaus, and, like, she's like, don't you want to say the last goodbye? And then they decide to have, like, sex, like bunnies, because they're vampires, and they go at it like bunnies. And I called Elijah a bunny on accident. Sorry, I'm all over the place, guys.
It's okay. Can we, like, just talk about the amazingness that is Haley and Elijah in the pool?
Oh.
Because yes. I loved that scene. Again, I always have a scene that sticks out for me.
I ship it so hard. I ship it so hard.
Like, it's just, it was so, it was just, she fully trusted him. Like, he's, you know, like, just listen to my voice, you know, stay connected to my voice. Like, I just love the whole thing. Like, everything about that scene was just so awesome and so powerful. And I was like, okay, yeah, I ship it. I'm on board. Like, let's go. Just loved it.
It was amazing. I'm like, I wish Elijah would hold me in a pool. Dang it. Like, that's not
lucky
fair.
Lucky girl.
Right? Dang it.
Lucky girl.
And so, well, let's talk about Rebecca and Marcel for a second. Why'd I call him Marcus? I don't know, guys. I don't like that ship at all. Like, I don't ship it hard at all. Like, I don't want Rebecca to get involved with Marcel. They're just, not good together, because Marcel's a little douchebag and Rebecca doesn't need another douchebag in her life. She always chooses the wrong men.
Well,
and then she's like,
I just want Rebecca to be happy. And I don't know what's going to make her happy. I don't hate Marcel. You have this hatred for Marcel.
I hate him. He's horrible.
I actually really like him as a character, as just a general guy. I think a lot of the time he's trying to do what's right by himself, and he's had a lot of things go wrong in the last couple of months since the originals came to town. And so I feel like, yeah, there's creepy things, there's things that Marcel does that I don't agree with, but overall I really like his character. So I'm not completely against him and Rebecca, but I love Rebecca, and I want her to find what she's been looking for so long. Like, she's always wanted to be happy and to, you know, and have an epic love. And if Marcel is it, then sure, I'm on board. But if it's not, then, you know, I just want Rebecca to get what she wants, basically.
But it's,
so I'm on board with whoever.
But Marcel can't be it, because he's just like, he's a conniving little douchebag who stole the city from her family. And then she's just like, oh,
they left.
Why don't you, like, run away with me? And I'm like, no! Rebecca, what are you doing? I don't care if they left. Like, that still doesn't give him a right to take over their city and not give it back when they come back.
Well, they left. They ran away. And he took the reins because he was kind of the next in line.
Yeah, but he lied about his death.
Didn't Klaus, like, tell him to?
Like,
what?
Okay, fair enough. I was like, didn't Klaus leave it to him?
Or no, they thought he was dead.
Oh, I totally missed.
They ran away without him because they thought he was dead. And then, lo and behold, he's alive and he's taken over the town.
When did they think he was dead?
He totally,
it makes me feel a little bit better about the fact that I apparently missed this.
Yeah, I missed this. Because as far as I knew, he keeps telling them, you left, you ran.
That's Marcel's side of the story. But like,
right.
But like,
they ran away.
They were explaining in like a couple episodes ago, like they ran away and they wanted to take Marcel with them, but they couldn't find Marcel because either Marcel ran away or they thought Marcel died. That's the only reason when they ran away they didn't take Marcel with them, and Marcel stayed behind and took over the town.
Well, but he took over in their wake because they were gone. There was nobody left to take over the town. So, of course, Marcel, being Klaus's, like, protege, but, you know, he would be the logical next to take over. And since he's been running it for, you know, I don't know, 50 years, I don't remember how long they had been gone, but since he's been running it for so long, I can see why he wouldn't want to just give it up to Klaus and Rebecca because they came home. Like, it's not any more their home than Mystic Falls is, because that's where they originally settled. Like, they can't just show up in Mystic Falls and say, this is our town, we're taking over. Like, I feel for Marcel, because this is his home and he's built his home there. So, like, it's not really fair for Klaus to come in and say, I want what's mine, give it back now. Like,
yeah, but Marcel, you know, took it in, like, a totally unfair way, I think. And I don't know. I hate him so much.
I know you do. I know. It's okay.
Man, I'm almost starting to hate him more than I hate Shepherd Book, and that's saying something. But let's talk about someone I don't hate for a second, which is Cammy. It's like the episode, before the episode ends, Klaus visits Cammy to tell her that a witch hexed her brother to commit those murders, and that she should feel better because now he's figured out who's done it and she's dead. But Cammy is amazing. She slaps Klaus because she doesn't like that she's now involved in like a revenge murder. And she's just like, that's not what I would have wanted. Like, I don't like want you to kill for revenge, which is amazing. And she hates that Klaus compelled her, and she vows to undo the compulsion. And when she does that, Klaus is going to wish that he never laid eyes on her. And I'm like, damn, girl, you go. I'm like, and like in my notes for this episode, I'm like, 4 for you, Cammy. You go, Cammy. Like,
yeah, she is a powerhouse. Like, I don't know what they have planned for her character, but they're making the right decisions for her right now. The writers are. She is not gonna sit back and just let things happen to her. Like, she's gonna take the bull by the horns and get what she wants and do what she needs to do. And I'm loving it. So, yeah, I'm all about this, you know, powerful, I'm not just going to, you know, bow down Cammy. I love her.
Heck yeah, I agree completely. Like, she's awesome. So the episode ends with Marcel visiting Haley, which is interesting. Marcel knocks on the door, Haley answers, and the episode ends with Marcel telling Klaus that, oh, I went by your place, and I met Haley, and then Klaus is like, wait, what? And he goes back to the house, and Elijah calls Rebecca, who's on her way out, and Elijah's like, Haley's gone. And I'm like, what did Marcel do with Haley? What could he have possibly done with Haley? Like,
I have
how
to
could
say,
he, how when, could you? I'm sorry.
When Elijah just showed up at the, or when Marcel just like showed up at the house, I'm sitting there thinking, can he enter?
Exactly.
House? Who owns the house? Right. Does Haley own the house?
Ooh. He doesn't own the house because he was a slave there, so...
Right, but, like, did Klaus put the deed in Haley's name? Because if so, then the only people that can enter would be people she invites in. But if it's in one of the original's names, then it's a vampire that owns it, and anyone can enter.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, like, sitting there thinking, who owns the house? Can he walk in?
Exactly.
What's going on?
Like, what's
maybe
happening?
Maybe they hadn't had time to switch the deeds, though, because, like, if the last owner of the house was the guy that owned the plantation and then it's been abandoned ever since, there's no way that any of the originals could have walked in, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Right, yeah. No, exactly, yeah.
But if, like, if the owner of the house dies, then they can walk into the house. And so if no one owned the house and no one had a deed to the house, then they can just walk in as like a foreclosed home, like what Catherine like used to do. And they can just take ownership, but they can't make it someone else's home. So they can't prevent it from anyone from walking in. I don't know. You'd think they'd have a fail-safe around that. Like, you'd think they would have had Haley own the house or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking and what I thought, and then I was like, you know, they've never said that. I'll bet it's not, and I'll bet he can walk right in the door. And then Elijah comes back and we find out that she's gone, and I'm like, apparently she didn't own the house. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh. Yeah, no, I'm very, very nervous for Haley, and I'm interested to see where this puts Elijah next episode. Like, I want to see how it affects him that she's gone.
Oh yeah, I'm excited to see what they're gonna do to get her back and what she's doing while she's gone. Like, Jeebus, it's insane. It's intense.
Very, very intense.
But that's it. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to mention for the originals that I had missed?
No, I just. Oh, but I will say that I thought that the last scene with like Marcella and Klaus, it was just so funny because it was such a show of like, who's going to be the more dominant male? And then they just leave it on that smirk and they're like, okay, nice to see you. Bye. Like, we'll pop around for tea later.
Oh.
That was so great.
I love the Klaus Marcel like conversations where they're like, that you can tell that they both have a respect for each other, but they hate each other at the mm-hmm. same time. So it's just dripping with, like, subtext. It's just like, ugh, okay, all right.
It's like,
let's
it's
just
like,
end this scene now.
It's like when they do what a lot of TV shows do with girls who hate each other, who are like, do wear those fake smiles and talk to each other. You're like, ooh, there's drama there. Like, I love it. Except it's with, like, Marcel and Klaus, and it's hysterical. But that's it. We're not going to do feedback or favorite quotes because we're running out of time and this episode's running a little long. So if you guys want to tell us what your favorite quotes are for the episodes or leave us some feedback so we can read it on the next episode of Vampire Hype, you can contact us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/vampirehype. You can leave a message on any of the Vampire Diaries or Vampire or original articles on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. Or you can email us at vampirehypepodcast@gmail.com, and we will read your feedback on the next episode of Vampire Hype. And until then, I'm Kyle.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Pamela.
Adios, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Open your mouth, boy. Show me what you got. Show me what you got. Show me what you got. Grr. Arrgh.